Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Megan. And today we are joined by Enneagram 3, Lauren Vardaman. Lauren, I am going to read the bio that you whipped up for us last night. I love it so much, and I'm excited to share you and your bio with our listeners. Lauren is a 36-year-old wife to Lars and mama to one spunky 5 3/4-year-old boy named Beau and 2 children in heaven named Ellis and Aster. She currently works in compensation consulting, but has a diverse job history from running beer festivals to working the expo floor at a national cable providers conference. She lives in Fort Myers, Florida, home of the recent largest hurricane in Florida history. Her happy place is the beach, and her angry place is any road in Southwest Florida. She's honestly never had to write a bio about herself before, so this feels like a good place to stop.
That's
awesome. I love that, and I can picture you driving through Southwest Florida just mad.
Every day. It's every day.
And yet, you braved the roads of Southwest Florida to drive across the state to celebrate my 40th birthday with me in Fort Lauderdale.
I did. The things we do for love.
That's awesome.
Lauren, I'm excited to have you. I'm going to add my own 2 cents in because I've known you since you were very, very small. Not exactly sure how old you were, but maybe since you were born, I think.
Since I was born. Yeah.
And we had... We just had a really close connection. Your mom and I were close friends. So you're kind of like a daughter to me, but maybe more like a cousin. Not really sure how that works out. We're not actually related, but we've just shared a lot of life. We've shared a lot of spaces. You babysat all my children. We spent Christmases together, lots of things. You lived in my house for a few months at one point. So just feel so close to you and so excited that you're willing to come on here and talk with us about being an Enneagram 3, but maybe a little bit more than that too. So yeah, flesh out your bio now for us now that it's officially over.
Oh, it's hard to talk about yourself, especially when you're a mom. People focus on your children all the time and just kind of forget that you're in the background, driving them around everywhere, making sure they can get to where they need to be. Yeah, we moved to Florida from our hometown, home area, where we lived over 30 years of our life, had our whole existence, packed up, moved to Florida, brought my mom, and are just kind of winging it down here. It's very interesting to live in such a tight-knit community like we had in our church for your whole life and then get up and go somewhere else. It kind of makes you feel like you don't know how to be friends with anyone. Yeah. Because you're so used to having such deep, literal, lifelong connections that you meet new people. And it's like, you don't know these 500 things about me. Like, but we do love it here, despite the hurricane and all the hardships that that brought to our family and to our community. We do love it here. And all of us feel like the Lord has called us here, still trying to figure out exactly why. But we love it. My husband was working in his same line of work. I started a new job where I work remotely and have lots of flex time where I can make sure that I'm there for my son and to support my family and be with my mom. My mom loves it here. She, I think, is happier to be here than we are, which seems kind of crazy to say because we absolutely love it. But she's very glad to not deal with the winter anymore.
Yeah,
and Beau just started school, and so that's brought a whole new dynamic to my life, to his life, to our family, and we're just figuring it out together in the beautiful, beautiful sunshine. So
that's awesome.
Now that he's 5 3/4, he's officially in kindergarten.
I figured we had to stop it at 3/4 because I mean, I could have increased the fractions. Like right now, we're at 5/6, but
we don't do math on this podcast.
That's too much.
So Lauren, I know the answer to this question, but for our listeners, what is your like journey through the Enneagram and discovering that you were a 3?
Ooh, my journey through the Enneagram has been very short, actually. I was raised in a community of very godly, aware people, lots of counselors in my life, in my family, in close relation, people that I was very comfortable going to, being open with, vulnerable. Sometimes those people forced themselves on top of me in that manner, which was fine and much needed and, you know, came out unscathed on the other side. But
most
so
part,
we did temperament. We focused a lot on temperament back then. And I can definitely see strains of that throughout Enneagram, but we had kind of done that and relied on that and had worked around, you know, how you relate in all these different areas. And so being introduced to the Enneagram was just a fresh approach on all of that. Just while we were chatting earlier, you know, talked about how you can kind of get so used to being able to identify these parts of yourself that it just is neutral. It just washes over you and you just feel very numb to it all. Seems kind of weird, but just, you know, oh, I've already been here. I've already done this. I've already explored this about myself. And so Enneagram kind of, you know, shines the flashlight from a different direction and just kind of refresh that whole sense that you first get when you take a test like this, that is where you feel very identified and feel I think the catchy word is feel very seen and realize that, oh, I'm not just this crazy person. This is something that is, you know, that other people are relating to because this is how they are wired, or this is how, you know, their life trajectory happened after XYZ event, this, that, or the other. And so it was nice to kind of revisit that. And with the guidance of, you know, with you, both Deidre and Megan there, because it was really difficult for me to take on the online quizzes because I had so much of that counseling history. You find that, well, is this how I really feel? Or is this a learned behavior? Or is it just because I'm having a really crappy day today and I'm taking this test feeling this way, or I'm having a super manic day today and I'm taking. So every time I took it, I was like, I don't really know if that makes sense. I feel like I could be any one of these numbers. And so to actually walk through it, with you guys made it much easier to be like, oh, okay. Like I definitely am identifying as this. It's not because I can just think about this or remember myself acting this way in a certain situation, really pinpointing that three and learning that, you know, no, you don't necessarily have to identify with every single one of these, because nobody would look at me and be like, that girl loves to be an actor like on stage. That's not a part of my identity, but a lot, so much other this of the stuff in three, is for sure me. So.
Nines can kind of see themselves in a lot of numbers because they don't think in very black and white ways, you know, and just can really see both sides. But I think threes might have a hard time nailing down because they don't really know what they want. And they can look at some of those numbers and be like, yeah, I could be like that. I can do that. I can also present like that. How do you want me to be in the world? So that's interesting.
Which is very three.
Yeah.
What do you want me to be? I'll be it. What do you want me to be? How can I make you happy? And how can I make you love me? And that's what I'll be. My aunt used to always call me would always call me her little chameleon, because just trying to be very adaptable, trying to be successful in, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing. I've always found that in my career, with my job, like there's never been a job that I haven't been able to do and rise to the occasion because I want to be that performer. I want you to validate me by saying, oh, good work, good job. You're doing an excellent, you know, here. Let's give you more work to do because we just love what you're doing and everything. And it definitely stems from that part of myself. So.
Well, and that three, I think at the moment where you kind of broke a little bit, which is what we find people when they really find their type, they're kind of like, I don't know if I like that, but also, oof, yeah, that's a tender spot, you know? Do you remember what the language around that was that you were like, I identify? Because obviously at three, we know like one of their fears is not to have worth, like, or do they have an identity outside of the mask that they put on to perform for these other external validating factors. So just curious if you remember kind of what that moment was where you're like, oh, that hits that tender, more exile. If I'm using IFS language, more of that exile, the belief that it has.
I wish that I knew what happened to my paperwork, because I wrote something down that Megan, it was something very specific that Megan said. She said, there's nothing sadder in life than a three that can't
succeed, can't win, basically.
And that wasn't the exact word, but like that exact phrase was when I at the retreat that we did this summer, very specifically just because of where I was personally, and I can identify that in different places in my life, but just specifically for the season that I am in now, I identified with that because of my desire to be a mother. I have a lot of history of child loss, just for me personally. And that probably broke me in a different way than it maybe would have, you know, 5 years ago in my life. And so it was very, very emotional and very personal for me, just specifically in that season. But it made me look at it in kind of a different light because, you know, I know a lot of women want to be mothers and a lot of women, you know, have difficulties starting a family or, you know, whatever that story may be for somebody personally. But because of how I am internally as you know, that three part of me just made me look at it in a different way of, you know, not only am I, you know, am I just sad about it just because of, you know, natural reasons, but because it makes me feel like a failure, which is not really a way that I'd ever looked at it before. And because I always kind of think like, you know, oh, a lot of people, you know, have struggles and a lot of people only have one children or choose to have one child or, you know, again, whatever that, you know, that story may be, every family is different. But to see how it actually was impacting me, because I do tend to avoid thinking about how all of that affects me personally, because it is, very raw and very big emotions and honestly things that don't have answers. Yeah. And so it's hard to examine those sorts of things and not have answers this side of heaven and just try to trust and try to move forward when there is this huge desire there that just cannot be fulfilled.
Yeah. And as a three in that heart shame triad, it's my guess that a lot of those like tender exiles in you are probably clustered around that feeling of shame. And I know that like before we started recording, you were kind of talking to us about that experience of realizing that it wasn't just that you were grieving the loss of these children or the loss that you've experienced through infertility, but that it made you feel ashamed almost, like that other people might see you differently because of those experiences. And I think that's hitting a three in a much different place than maybe it could hit another Enneagram number because of some of those exiles. Do you want to say anything about that? You said it so much better than I did.
Well, I had to live it. So don't beat yourself up. Yeah, there is a unique balance of shame that comes with any sort of infertility or child loss, whether it's pregnancy loss, infant loss, you know, the wide range, where, you know, you are already so sad and feeling so defeated and feeling all these emotions, and then to flip it around on the other side. And not only the shame that you put on your own self of, well, why couldn't I, why didn't I, what did I, but then thinking about the external things that people think of you, which is something very driven by a three, how everybody else perceives you. And, you know, thinking about, you know, what is other people's reaction? And it took me a while to get to that because at first the grief was so deep, I didn't care about anybody else. Yeah. But as I walked through and progressed through grief, I started to think, well, my goodness, what do people think whenever they hear that, you know, that my child died? What do they think about me? Are they judging me, thinking that I didn't do things right? Because goodness gracious, I have to do things right. You know, did I do something wrong? Is there something I should have done? What could have been done? And, you know, really, is this my fault? And even though I knew, you know, in my head, of course it wasn't my fault. My doctor said it, experts said it. But it doesn't change the way that you just feel like there should have been something that you could have done, which is a common thread, no matter what number you are, whenever you have gone, through an experienced pregnancy or child loss. But I feel like I just felt it a lot extra, just because of some of those tendencies, that there are. And definitely with shame in general, you want to cover it. And it's certainly something that I run away from and don't usually take the time to bother exploring, because it's big and it's messy. And the three side of me that wants to do doesn't want to make time. Doesn't want to make time for that, and doesn't want to sacrifice my to-do list to let myself sit in my emotions. I remember even after this most recent miscarriage that I had, about a year ago, I had like a couple of days that I kind of took some time, needed to, because of this physical stuff that I was going through, but then I was just ready to get back to life. And that is after having walked through years of grief counseling, after losing our first son. And so it doesn't matter how much you know about yourself. There's just that internal that internal stuff that you just can't fight. And it's easier to just fall back into your patterns, no matter how unhelpful or unhealthy they may be.
Yeah, that's a really good segue into some of the, like, the managers, those protector parts that help us get through our world. Because the gift of a three is that you are so productive and so task oriented, and we need people like you in the world to just, well, get things done, but also to move forward. You know, like, you have this energy that's very forward facing that helps bring other people into a new reality that you can envision. So that's a really good thing. But it's when they're protecting that exile for fear of it being flooded, you know, like, how big does shame get when it really is present? Those emotions can be completely overwhelming. So yeah, even outside of infant loss, like, just as a three, there was probably, it could point to a lot of other things in your life, even before that adult experience, that type of deep, deep loss and grief, where you learned really early on that it was just easier to not let shame show up because it was really messy and it was overwhelming. You know, I'm just thinking about, like, even how we engage when we're flooded. We maybe cry so hard we can't breathe, or we just want to run away and hide because we're not sure what to do. And so just some of those managers that get there, that are the get things done, put that away nice and tidy. So just curious, like, as you look at some IFS work that we did over that weekend at the retreat, what are some of the new roles those managers can play for you if they're not just protecting that exile part of shame?
Oh, man.
Kind of put you on the spot. Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. It's good for people to know that the regular person doesn't just have the answers all the time.
If they've been listening to us for any length of time, they already know that.
This is like on-air processing. Sorry to put you in the hot spot.
No, it's all right. That's tough. It's honestly not something that I would say that I really reflect on a lot, because there just is that side of me that knows that I can task my way through anything. And which, another on the flip side of that, is that when you operate in that mode, people don't know to think to check on you to make sure that you're doing okay, and it doesn't leave there to be any room for anybody to come in and help you. And so, honestly, I don't know. I would have to say you got to ask me a few more leading questions than that, because that's so broad, that I just don't focus on that about myself very often. I'm very outward facing, which, talking about, you know, yes, obviously I have this more recent thing that I can relate to, but just from knowing myself at a younger age and going through temperament and all your courses, you know, being the child, again, something else a ton of people can relate to is child of divorce, and how that played itself out in my life. And just knowing that it was easier to function, not being a burden, you know, not wanting to be a burden to anybody, with my, you know, with my emotions, and just trying to be good and help and everything whenever I was younger, and definitely ingrained patterns as I got older, and never really let that whole inner reflection and prioritizing myself try to come first. And I know that that's something that so many people struggle with. You talk about, you know, self-care and what that really looks like. And I am horrible at self-care. I look at it as a waste of time, which I know it's not.
I think this all makes a lot of sense though, Lauren. I mean, one of the things you said, I think I was quoting Suzanne Stabile in that teaching that said, you know, there's no sadder place on the Enneagram than a three that can't succeed, or whatever that was. But she also says in those teachings about three that the place where real growth and healing for three comes in is after a big failure. They can't reframe, basically, almost like a seven. They have to come to a place where they experience something so, like, grief filled, they can't reframe it into something positive. And that's when they have to start doing the inner work. And we also know from Brené Brown research that the way to combat shame is with vulnerability. And I think that after you lost Ellis, that you couldn't just task your way through it for a long time. And you had to sit in those big emotions and those big feelings. And you ended up combating a lot of that shame with vulnerability. I didn't even know you very well during that time, but just kind of watching you on social media, just the openness that you shared your process through the grief and through those big emotions, I think probably was a huge turning point for you and how you deal with your emotions in those shame places.
Yeah. I think what, we're going to just do some of this work right here. You're welcome. I know you love me and you'll let me, but the only way to update and reassign new roles to the managers is when the exiles can be unburdened of the lies they've been carrying for so long. So you kind of said that. I'm going to say it back in like the words I heard from you. Maybe they weren't your words, but you know, like, let's say a child of divorce, you're thinking, I don't want my emotions to be a burden for someone else. So you decide, what do they need from me so that I can still find acceptance and love and belonging, right? So so it becomes very others focused, because if it becomes you focus, the fear is what? If you became one or they had to deal with your emotions, then what?
Oh yeah, the fear is that there won't be, that my emotions are going to be too much for mm-hmm. somebody else, that my sadness is going to be too much and that will drive people away. And, you know, they won't love you. They won't accept you. They won't want to be around you. And then you'll just be alone and sad.
Yeah. You're sad now, but at least you're with people. If you're sad yeah. and you're alone, it's the worst, right? So I think that you were able to kind of, you had to look at that fear head on in the loss of your son and recognize that there was no skirting the sadness. Like, there was no way for it to not be visible and present. And it had to be someone else's burden, even though it wasn't a burden for anyone else to carry. But, you know, like, you could, this was not something you could shove down and put on a good face about. And so the beautiful thing about that is that's probably started restoring for you, like a new narrative could start to replace that you could sit with these big emotions and put them out in the world, and people didn't throw you away. There was still space made for you, and you had just as much value in your grief as you did in your productivity, you know? And so that begins, if you can allow that exile to start believing a new truth, that the depth of who they are is a privilege for others to witness and to hold, you know, and it's not too much and it's not too big, then the more that belief can become a new way of thinking and you really renew your mind to that new truth, then those managers can be like, so out of the abundance of how loved and held and cared for we are, we can do for others, which doesn't really change what you're doing, but it changes why you're doing it. Instead of us striving to do so that you're not a burden, so they won't throw you away, you can choose to love others through the things you do for them. It really is that simple, but it's not simple to live out.
I can definitely see how that would also help with some of that emotional taxation that you feel whenever you're doing, yeah. whenever you shift that reasoning behind why you're doing, rather than making it be because I want to hide. It's because I want to love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even for our kids, I know we were kind of talking about parenting before we started recording. We're not going to do it right. We're going to mess up. We're going to do some things wrong. But if we can do it from a place of, gosh, I just love them. I want what's best for them. And I'm willing to say, I'm sorry when I do it wrong, because I love, like, the repair for them is more important. But also then for you as a three, like, when something happens, you're not a failure because of that. You know, we're all learning this together. No one parents perfectly, literally no one. So there's just, we can start to breathe a little bit when we take some of the burden of that exile. That's like, you've got to do this so that you don't fail, so that you don't get thrown away. It's like, I'm going to fail. I am going to fail. I'm going to do some things wrong. And that's okay. Like, there's grace for that. I don't know. I just think it's the difference between holding my breath through life and clenching and being able to exhale and be like embodied, you know, it's just such a big difference. And I can tell when I'm in one versus the other so clearly by just the way that, like you said, the exhaustion that comes from that, it's a taxing to live in that space.
That sounds, not that it isn't frustrating whenever you find yourself going back to those old patterns, but even just being able to say, oh, I can identify whenever I am operating in this function that I know is not the healthiest for me. What do the kids these days say? That's goals. That's goals.
Like, you're back in pocket, not out of pocket.
I'm gonna have to Google that one. Just give me just a second. Like, I don't.
Don't let my daughter listen to this podcast. She'll just be rolling her eyes.
Even if you use it correctly, that's even more cringy, because they're like, no, you don't get to do that. I'm not sure if it's worse to do it wrong and let them eye roll, or to do it right and let them be like, no.
I'll just sit here in all my geriatric millennialness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Please excuse me while I go fix my side part. So
Okay, so shifting before we finish here, some of the other parts. So we know that threes share a line with six and nine, not to exclude your wings, but just for sake of time, I thought maybe we could focus on that, like in stress and security, what that looks like. And just curious if you've done any work with that, if you can recognize when you've shifted in stress to that
nine
space that makes you kind of want withdraw or become maybe even like just emotionally inaccessible because you've done everything you can in your three and kind of fallen through the, and then now you're like, oh, okay, I'm out. I'm done. You know, what does that look like versus maybe insecurity when you move toward more of that six space that's like the cheerleader for other people? You can make it about them. You can encourage them. The group energy and loyalty that belongs there instead of being so focused on how people are viewing you in that space.
Yeah, I would say that I probably operate in stress most of the time. Just again, because of who I am and my experiences, obviously in the stage of life that I'm in, parenting is really, really high on my radar. And I have a lot of extra added stress, in my life because of my history that everything about Bo, I try so hard, try so, so hard to be balanced, but it's almost impossible. And I had a note here and now it is lost. Welcome to my daily life. Oh, it's this one right here. Yes. So that peacemaker nine, absolutely. Just what can I do in my world to make it to where nobody will hardly even notice me? I want it to be so peaceful. Nobody even notices that I'm here. Uh-huh. You know, my husband will always just be like, where did you go? And I'm like, I'm still here. I just can't, I don't want to talk about it right now. I just, please don't. I feel so overloaded that having to try to even open enough of myself up to let somebody else in to try to help me out seems like too much. I know that I can hunker down and I can do it and I can manage it. And I, me. And I just don't even want any external force to come in and try to mess because I'm barely holding it together here.
Yeah. It's almost like the manager of task. It works until all of a sudden it doesn't. And then you have a firefighter. That's that nine part that comes in. And it's like, okay, now be invisible. Yeah, the task, absolutely. Like I can't task right now. So I have to be invisible. And yeah. You already mentioned this in this episode, but you said that you don't like self-care. And I would just like to counter that maybe that little firefighter is trying to get your attention because there's some self-care, so self-compassion, rest that you need to find when you get to that space.
Oh, I can definitely identify with that. I feel like at this point in my life, I've operated in that function for so long. The idea of doing anything new and the possibility of failure or doing it wrong and, takes nine times to get it, you know, right on the 10th time. I don't want to make time for that in my life. I would rather just function in my dysfunction. And I know that, but I know that's not healthy. I know it's not. Like, I know that it's terrible and that's a terrible thing that I'm saying.
Well, first of all, self-care doesn't have to be a bubble bath. Okay. So like anything that you don't find life-giving doesn't have to be on that list. If it really feels like a waste of time. But secondly, I don't know, as we get closer to our midlife, you know, there's just things that we did need for a season. You needed to figure out how to become invisible to keep the peace sometimes. Like that's just true. And one of the beautiful things about IFS is it's not about changing behavior. It's really just about spending a little time with that part to go, oh, like little Lauren, you know, I know it sounds weird. We try not to get too weird on the podcast when we're doing the IFS stuff. But if I was talking to you without anybody listening, I would say, let's talk to little Lauren who feels like the only recourse she has now because she can't do anymore. She can't please anymore. She has to become invisible. We really get curious about like, where's that little firefighter leading us to the exiled part that really has, you know, these managers to do. And then the firefighters that come in and pull back and be invisible, they're exhausted. They've been doing this stuff for 30 something years, right? Like they're tired. And if we just try to replace behavior, then you're looking at it from that three lens, like, what if I fail? But if we can take care of that part that is driven to produce all the time and be right and not fail, then we can actually take a burden off and all of a sudden you can breathe. And then you've got some choices to make, you know? And it doesn't have to be a bubble bath. It can be something creative. It can be doing something just because you want to do it and not because it checks the to-do list off, you know. But I don't know. I think that as I go into being a little older, that I have just decided that all that stuff is just too heavy to carry for the next half of my life. I just can't do it. I'm exhausting my body. I'm exhausting my spirit. I'm exhausting my soul, and I'm not good for anybody, much less my own company. So I just think that you're in a perfect place to, you see these things and you can say, I can fail to do something differently because, you know, that younger part of myself, she deserves to be seen for just who she is. Sorry, I turned this into a counseling session.
Right. And thus ends the counseling of the Enneagram 3.
Somebody out there needs to hear it. It's hard to find a place where you feel where you feel worthy. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's not a lot of focus in society, which is the number one thing that we're surrounded by all the time, that really shows you how to feel what it is to really feel worthy, because it's so focused on external things. And doesn't guide you like, you know, like IFS and like Enneagram do. You said it really well. It's like, okay, well, now this taking care of myself is just becoming another task. That's really what it ends up being. It just still stays really surface rather than digging down and looking, talking to little Lauren. And,
you know, Hope, my daughter is a 3, right? And so literally just this morning, we kind of were talking about something and she's saying, it's so hard to know what she wants because she's always had her eye out on what other people want of her. Mm-hmm. So to take that exploration time internally feels like a really massive deep dive into a void of nothingness. And that is scary for a 3. Yeah. So I understand that that's not easy to say, you know, what is it that would be what you want for yourself? Like, you haven't spent time looking internally to see, where does that worth and value come from? And I think that's unique to everybody in some way or another, but specifically,
yeah,
that worth statement is a big thing. And it's not even like you've been looking externally to like what marketing companies say you need. You've been looking to, what does mom need for me? What does dad need for me? What does my husband need for me? What does this friend need for me? You know, just to be of worth and value to someone, but there is an inherent value in who you are. So it's scary to do that work, but you're worth it.
Well, it can turn into a vicious cycle, I feel, especially for a 3, because to take time for yourself feels like a betrayal of everyone else. Mm. Because now I'm taking time from me, which means I'm having to take away time from you. And if I'm taking away time from you, now are you going to reject me? Now are you going to not give me love? Now are you going to think that I don't have value? And just spirals right on down.
Well, we would say invite Jesus into that moment to talk to that little one, because he has some different things to say about her worth. And yes, I know
he does. Yeah.
I won't make you do it on air.
I have really enjoyed this.
It's messy work, but it's the most rewarding work I've spent my life doing, I think. And I built a lot of things and managed a lot of things and did all the things for all the people for a lot of years. And I'm ready to just do this work where I can settle into who I am. And I see you getting more and more comfortable in your skin too. And it's really beautiful to see.
I absolutely agree. And it is some of the most important work that you can do, in my opinion.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I know this is always hard to be vulnerable when you don't even know who's going to be listening, but I appreciate your story. And I know that someone needed to hear that today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.